meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Scared Monkeys Radio. Of course, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And if you're listening on satellite, on the podcast, on Access Communication Channel 7, or wherever you pick us up, you can always check us out there. Have you been following the coverage of a former, I guess it's former now since we've talked last. Last time it was suspended police officer in Bolingbrook, Illinois, Drew Peterson. Well, this story keeps going on and on and on. And I happened to read an article on MSNBC's webpage by my friend, retired FBI agent, criminal profiler, Clint Van Zandt, about Peterson and his recent appearance on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. And I thought I'd bring Clint on to talk about that. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening, Dana.
Isn't this case is something else, is it not? This now retired, resigned, I'm not sure what to call him, I think he's quit, police officer. When I heard his pension numbers, I thought, oh, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing is they won't let him quit, Dana. Supposedly, he's, the last I heard, he gave his chief a letter of resignation, but there's some internal investigations going on. Something he was involved in earlier this year that has nothing to do with wife number three or wife number four. And the last I heard within the last couple of days was that they were not going to let him retire. Now, the smart thing, you and I know, if in fact they find something to fire him for, then they wouldn't have to pay his pension, I guess.
Right, yeah, that's true. It was a pursuit where he was a supervisor and they have a no chase policy and he gave the okay for the chase. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I happened to catch the video of Matt Lauer interviewing him, and I'll tell you, my instinct and my interrogation skills and my, we've all worked with that that John Wayne cocky, arrogant, I'm going to say narcissistic personality, and there he was on the screen. I couldn't believe it. I wanted to reach in there and give him a little bit of a shake. Let's talk about that interview.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was on the Today Show the next day. I flew in and sat with Matt, and then we played different parts of the interview and talked about it. And he is just as you described, Dana, and you and I, unfortunately, have seen these types. And, you know, people who listen to your program know that, you know, 98% of men and women who go into law enforcement go into it for honorable reasons. They go into it because they want to help. They care about their fellow man. They don't go into it for the money. We all know that.
Yeah, but that's true.
You go into it for other altruistic reasons. But there's that small percentage that go into it for the wrong reasons. They want power, dominance, control. They want to ride roughshod over people. And you know, usually we screen those out, but occasionally there are those who slip through. And when you saw this guy, Sergeant Drew Peterson, sitting there, you know, no, number one, of course, just the arrogance.
Yeah.
First of all, he runs around his house for the last 2 weeks wearing a mask, sunglasses, and NYPD hat, which must have driven a New York Police Department crazy to see pictures of this guy in their hat.
Yep.
Walking around saying, I don't want anybody to see my face. Well, then he goes on the Today Show that has 12 or 14 million viewers.
Right.
You know, you think, what are you thinking with, buddy, other than your head?
Yep, the fancy haircut and the fancy suit. And here we've got a street cop, 30 years, suspected, and again, it's alleged, responsible for the death of his third wife, disappearance of his fourth. This story has got more twists and turns in it than most interstate highways. We also see now the family hiring famed pathologist Michael Bodden, who went on many TV shows and pronounced, even before he did the autopsy, that wife number three's death was a homicide, and then came out with that. What a lot of people don't realize, Clint, is that there's a lot more to this investigation, and let's talk about that part,
sure.
of, part of it, all of a sudden you're running this case. You have a family who have more than enough right, and I don't blame them for hiring a pathologist for a third opinion. The second official autopsy, which the results probably won't come out for some time because it's part of the investigation. Now it's getting tough to build a case because this Drew Peterson, let's look at his personality, he's not stupid.
No, this guy's not stupid. Number one, he is narcissistic. I mean, you know, he is the sun and we are the planets.
Yeah.
He thinks he's smarter than anybody else, he's a sociopath, so it does not bother him whatsoever to commit these terrible acts against another person. As we know, he's on wife number four now, which means wife number two, I guess, has just surfaced.
Right.
And in that case, wife number two has indicated he was a domineering individual. He gave her a hard time. He told her that I could kill you and they would never find your body.
Right.
Then wife three winds up dead. Wife number four winds up disappeared. Wife number two, you know, you almost have to have a scorecard. You have to, if these women are all alive, you'd have to put them in uniform with one, two, three, and four on their backs so we understood what we were talking about. I don't say that facetiously because this guy, I think, is a no-good murderer.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also described as a womanizer, and I think that's part of that narcissistic, sociopathic personality where he had no loyalty whatsoever to the woman he was dating. As you know, wife number three, who wound up dead in a bathtub, probably after she had been beaten, perhaps strangled by him, then he put her in a tub and filled the tub with water, to make it look like an accident. Wife number four, Stacy Peterson, the missing woman now, she was only 17 when he was dating her at the same time he was married to his 40-year-old wife. So this guy would know loyalty if it ran over him like a Mack truck.
Yeah, exactly. Clint Van Zandt's here, and we're talking about former, well, maybe current sergeant, suspended sergeant. We don't know what he is.
Yeah, I don't know what to call him now.
Anyway, I can think of a couple of words, but I can't say them on radio.
Yeah.
Again, looking at that personality, looking at the Lauer interview and some of the responses, Peterson, we talk about body language, we talk about interrogation techniques, and you try to read a person through their answers, through their body language, through their responses. This guy was a classic, was he not?
Well, you know, you take the let's take it in reverse almost. The very last thing out of his mouth, Matt Lauer on the Today Show says, well, you know, Drew, what would you say to Stacy, your fourth wife? What would you tell her? And he kind of laughs. He gives a half chuckle. Just come home.
Yeah.
It's like he's talking to Lassie, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, here the woman has been missing for 3 weeks. He's not participated in one search to help look for her whatsoever. And then he talks about her like she was a possession as opposed to someone he loved. And that is consistent when you look at his namesake, Scott Peterson, when you look at Susan Smith, who through false tears, I mean, you know, she was responsible for the death of her children. There are a number of individuals out there that have had the ability to be involved in the death of a loved one. But, you know, let's talk about wife number three real quick.
Yep.
This is the 40-year-old woman who allegedly drowned in a bathtub. And, you know, what bothers me about that is four agencies let that woman down.
Yep.
The local police department that Sergeant Peterson worked for, they allowed it to go down as a accident or a drowning. The Illinois State Police came in. The investigator who was involved in that never attended the autopsy, never went in the house, was on vacation during most of the investigation, and even though he had seen letters from family members saying that this guy said he was going to kill the woman, did not bring that to the attention of the coroner's jury. He let the family down. Then the coroner's jury realized the coroner in that area is not a medical doctor. He's an elected official. The coroner and the coroner's jury all accepted, even though she had 8 bruises on her body and drowned in a tub that you and I would almost have to stand on our heads to drown in, they accepted that as an accident. And then the district attorney bought off on that too. So four agencies, any one of which could have stepped up and said, hey, this is dumb. A 40-year-old woman in great physical shape does not drown in a bathtub small enough to, you know, to be a little bitty rowboat or something like that. It just, it's unconscionable. And then when you add to that that her husband, a police officer, had said, had threatened her life, had allegedly held a knife to her throat before, had beaten her where she had to go to the ER before. I mean, yeah, how do we miss these things? And then the question that comes to me, and I'm sure to you too, and even your listeners have to think about it, was this guy given a pass because he was a police officer, or was he just able to con his way through because he knew his way around the system?
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a little bit of both. Let's talk about the media portion of this. Without the media, I'm not sure this would have been followed up as much as it has been. So that's a good thing.
Now, yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting. I've been on, you know, television almost nonstop the last 2 or 3 weeks talking about this case on NBC and MSNBC. And there is and it's interesting how the media makes a decision to what case they're going to follow. You and I know that just in the United States, there's about 850,000 people reported missing every year. Now, most of those people come home. They're runaways. They're walkaways. We find them. But there's a finite number of cases that the media grabs and says, we're going to take this case. It's the Stacy Petersons. It's the Natalie Holloways that they grab, and they run with that. But as you say, I think in this case, if it wasn't for the media, like cable television 24/7, and then the major networks then got onto it, like Matt Lauer and the Today Show, when you have that much public attention, when you have that spotlight cranked up, all of these agencies that I think blew it on the third wife, and now, of course, Mike Bowden says it was a homicide, and I think it always has been, of course, a homicide.
Sure, yeah.
I think there is, as much as the media can be a pain in the butt so many times, and they put their nose in investigations where they don't belong, in a case like this, I think they and the internet bloggers who continue to hammer away on this serve a very good purpose, and that's they don't allow these agencies to turn their head the other way and shrug their shoulders. They make them go back and dot their I's and cross their T's, and in this case, they've made him go back and reclassify an accident to a probable homicide.
We've talked about law enforcement, the perception of law enforcement in the media. Now, let's reverse this a little bit. We've heard about Sergeant Peterson, Sergeant Peterson, Sergeant Peterson, Sergeant Peterson. You see the pictures in the media of him in his uniform standing beside the missing wife. Yeah. All of a sudden, you get the perception, or the public gets the perception of, like we talked about, incompetence, cover-up, oh, he's a cop, the blue wall of silence, say what you want. Has the media gone right that way, or have they pushed the idea of him being a police officer too much?
I think the combination of a missing young mother, you know, she had two children by herself, and she was raising two children by deceased woman, Sergeant Peterson's third wife. But it's interesting, we attach that connotation to it, Sergeant, because I think that is part of the media interest, is that he's a police officer. It's just like, you know, you and I may have talked about the case, I guess it was last summer in Ohio, where that police officer was married and had one family, and then he had a girlfriend, and he had one child by her, and she was pregnant with a second child, and he wound up killing her and taking her body out and trying to burn it. I think part of the interest was it was a missing pregnant woman, but part of it was that it was a police officer again. You know, in years ago, there was a police chief in Los Angeles, and he made an interesting statement. I'm talking 30 years plus, 40 years ago. He said, you know, the only problem with recruiting police officers is we have to take them from the human race.
Right.
And I've always held on to that. I mean, the same goes for FBI agents or anybody else, that we all have our own challenges, frustrations, our own issues. And, you know, I've arrested a lot of guys as an FBI agent over the years who said, I could have been a police officer. Right. I could have been an FBI agent, you know. Yeah. And in their way, they were probably right. You know, they may have been smart. They may have been cagey. And there are those who say, you know, where a police officer turns right, sometimes a criminal turns left. And There may be a very small difference. When you get someone like Drew Peterson, unfortunately, there is no difference. He combined the very best with service to the public in the form of police officer and the very worst womanizer, perhaps individual fully capable of and now suspected of one, if not two, different homicides.
My friend and yours, Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch, called Drew Peterson and said, why don't you come out, give us a hand, help us search. Many of us have said, you know, come forward, take a polygraph. That's another show for another time about polygraphs. There's all sorts of things. But all of a sudden now, from a guy, like you say, who's covered his face up and put on the NYPD hat, he's on the Today Show. Who knows what he'll be on next week. Let's talk about that a little bit. You're Drew Peterson's attorney. You must be going crazy.
Well, you know, I think Drew Peterson advised himself to go on the Today Show.
Yeah.
You know, the old, I think it was Abraham Lincoln said, a fool has himself for an attorney.
Yeah, exactly.
In the case of Drew Peterson, you know, a little inside here, I talked to, because I was on the Today Show the following day, and someone told me, they said, you know, it was eerie having that guy here. You know, he had a handler with him who was kind of taking him around. But they take him in a green room where you have to wait, and Celine Dion was there, and she was being interviewed. And he was like, they told me he was kind of like, you know, Barney Fife or whoever that guy was on with Barney. It was like, golly, do you always have big stars like this? Well, he was equating stardom with being on television. When he sees a famous singer and he's sharing the same room, this guy thinks he's a rock star. You know, his 15 minutes of fame, he doesn't realize we're interested in you because everybody in the United States, maybe the free world, thinks you're a single, if not a double killer. And there's this arrogance that flows from him that's like, I got away with murder once, I can get away with it twice. And you know, the challenge is, he may still do that.
Yeah.
Simply because they can prove, simply because Mike Bowden believes, and I think he's right,
sure,
that wife number three was a homicide, prove that Drew Peterson did it. And simply because wife number four is disappeared, prove that this guy had anything to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. And Michael Bowden and every investigator and you and I and the public and the news media, we can talk about him, but until this character is wearing some prison blues and singing the Folsom prison blues, that's a whole different story. Before I let you go, Clint, there was some breaking news today on the Madeleine McCann story. There's some law enforcement that are coming forward saying that they believe 100% that she's alive. Your thoughts?
I think she could be. I mean, that's the hope of every parent who's lost a child. Number one, I really do not believe the parents had anything other than neglect to do with her disappearance. I mean, I hold them. The mistake the parents did was six nights in a row, they went to dinner. They went to dinner from, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock to 10:30 every night. Anyone who was watching who wanted to kidnap that child could see that pattern of behavior on the parents. Could see that perhaps they spent, you know, more time at the dinner table and less time checking on their kids, and the window of opportunity was open for an unknown offender. I don't think the timeline allows for the parents to have done it. And in the best case scenario, the child was either kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and murdered, and it's interesting the body hasn't been found, or there are children, blonde-haired, blue-eyed children that there is, unfortunately, a tremendous underground market for. And in a worst-case scenario, other than dead, somebody's got that child and continues to abuse her. In a best-case scenario, somebody who wanted a child, couldn't have it of their own, paid a big dollar, and now they're going to try to raise her as her own in their own screwed up mind, thinking that it's almost like a form of adoption. But there are the parents stuck in limbo every morning, waking up thinking maybe they went through a nightmare. And you know, Dana, the only thing worse, I think, than losing a child, and in their case being suspected of having something to do with it, is not knowing. That's the limbo they and so many other families, every morning you get up You leave the porch light on the night before, hoping your child will come home. You never change the phone number of your house. You leave the bedroom decorated the same. And I know families that have lived in that limbo for 25 years. And I hope, for the sake of the McCanns, if they were not involved, and I still don't think they were, that they're able to find out what happened to that young baby.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'm being corrected by one of my very astute listeners. They say that those were private investigators hired by the McCanns, not law enforcement, making the statement that they believe that she's alive. Regardless who's ever making this statement, if they are able to prove that and find that child, that would be a good thing. Clint Van Zandt, it's always a pleasure. You're one of the busiest guys I know, and I appreciate your time.
My best to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah, we'll be back in just a minute. We haven't had anyone on from the Minutemen for a while, and we're going to bring Al Garza on. He's the National Executive Director of the Minutemen to talk about driver's licenses for illegal aliens and just what's happening with that border fence. It's always a popular segment here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and we'll be right back. And then a little later on, another criminal profiler. You see her on Nancy Grace, Larry King, wherever. Pat Brown will be here, and we're going to talk more about Drew Peterson. That's here tonight on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
And we're back. We haven't done a segment with someone from the Minutemen for a while, but it's been very prevalent in the news media lately. Everything from driver's licenses for illegal aliens to, of course, the border fence. What's happening there? Should the National Guard be back patrolling the border and help building that fence? I actually saw some news yesterday regarding that dirtbag drug smuggler from Mexico who agents Compion and Ramos are serving jail time for right now. He himself is doing some jail time or has been indicted for something. I thought I'd bring on Al Garza. Al is the National Executive Director for the Minutemen Project. Hi, Al. Welcome back.
How you doing, Dana?
Nice to have you on the show. Have you heard, and I thought I'd ask with you, you first, and I haven't prepped you on this one, about this dirtbag that Ramos and Compion are doing jail time for. He's apparently finally indicted. What have you heard? What can you tell us?
Yeah, Davila.
Right.
Yeah, he got caught with virtually the same kind of amount of narcotics that he had before when he was caught by Ramos and Compion. He had about $1 million worth.
Jeez.
Supposedly, it happened, a couple of weeks ago or so, or something like that. Last week, I believe.
And so this is the guy that the DA gave immunity to before, who these agents are serving jail time for, is caught with, again, $1 million worth of dope.
That's correct. In exchange for his testimony, false one at that, he was given immunity. And this is not the first time he's got caught, by the way. He had got caught right after he got carte blanche from Johnny Sutton. He had got caught again, but then they dismissed all the charges. They let the guy go, and the rest is going to be history. I knew eventually this guy's going to get bold enough, like they all do, bold enough where he's going to get caught. And it's ironic to be the same amount, the same quantity. He's certainly not a novice, as he claimed to be.
No, that's for sure. Has there been any news on the two Border Patrol agents? We haven't heard much lately.
Well, the last I heard, I talked to the father-in-law, I believe it was about a month or so ago. He has been transferred, Ramos has been transferred to Phoenix, Arizona, which is not far from where I reside. It's about a three-hour drive or so. So it's at least closer to home, to El Paso.
Well,
but he's doing much better. His spirits are up, especially now. I'm sure that he has heard that Davila is in the slammer, which means what it always meant, that Johnny Sutton better watch his tail because people are coming after him now, legally.
Absolutely. And that's the way it should be. Now, let's get to why I have you here tonight. The National Guard, the Minutemen have came out with a press release. We're talking about the National Guard bringing them back to the border, having them do what they should be doing, helping with the fence. What can you tell us what's going on there, Al?
So far, they've not made their move, but we anticipate that happening. And I'll tell you why. First off, I don't know if you read the news early this morning where now Felipe Calderon, the president, Mexican president, is so bold and so aggressive that he's demanding things of the Congress and, of course, the people that are running for president now. He's telling them that they better change their tune, start treating the illegal immigrants like human beings, and stop using them as political ploys in football. That he's going to do something. Well, he ought to be doing something about them in Mexico instead of butting into our business, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is what goes on. We don't secure the border. We don't enforce laws. We give them immunity. We give them the Strive Act. We give them the Dream Act. We give them the free education. We give them they don't have to pay for insurance. They don't, you know, if they want a driver's license, they can get one. They can go on welfare. You know, what else can we give them? Well, quite frankly, I feel that they want the country. And if we allow this to continue happening, they're going to take the country over. Press due for Spanish.
You know, we've seen a lot as far as the race for president in the United States goes. It's North American coverage of, unfortunately, the media's slanted way to the left, but we see a lot of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and others, and they stumble and mumble their way through this question as far as immigration, as far as border security, even the driver's license question. No one can seem to answer that properly. I'm curious on your take, Al, as far as the Minutemen goes, in your own personal opinion, what do you think these candidates have been doing besides shooting themselves in the foot every time they speak?
Well, I'll tell you frankly, the way I see it, you can almost read between the lines. They've knuckled down to special interest groups, La Raza, LULAC, ACLU, Mecha, the list goes on, not to mention corporate America, the NAU, and all these other things. All these are nefarious things that are going on in America. They've knuckled down to them, and they know that if they say the wrong thing, they're going to lose the Latino vote, and to them it's very important. Forget what the United States citizens care. It's what the Latinos that are coming in from Mexico that really mean a lot. And, you know, I'm Latino, so I'm speaking for all of the Latinos. The illegal immigrants can vote the day he gets here with fake IDs and all these kind of things. So Hillary, Obama, and all these other guys that are caving into him, they ought to be sent to Mexico as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
Got to be deported.
Exactly. You know, we talk about the southern border all the time, but there's been quite a bit in the news regarding the Canadian border, the porousness of it, and how the illegals are getting into Canada and leaving Canada to come back into the United States, that those from Mexico that can't get into the States are thinking that Canada is a safe haven. We don't hear much as far as the Minutemen and the Canadian border, maybe a little bit earlier on, but I'm sure my listeners would be interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, quite frankly, we do have people now surveilling and reporting illegal activity in Canada. But why would people want to leave Canada when they've got it made there just like they do here?
Yeah.
Mexico is the one that really, the country they want to leave. They want to deport themselves into the United States. Canada does have some activity, but keep in mind a lot of that activity is mostly drugs. You are going to have illegal activity in terms of the illegal immigrants. But once they get there and they see that things are not so bad, it's certainly a lot better than Mexico. I don't know of any Canadians that want to go to Mexico, nor do I know of any Americans.
Yeah, that's true.
That they're retired. They want to go live in Mexico.
Yeah, that's true. That's no truer word spoken. I'm sure you've seen the coverage. It's been a while that the Geraldo Rivera and Bill O'Reilly going head-to-head on this issue, the yelling and the screaming matches back and forth. But O'Reilly, in his brash manner, says it best, in my opinion. These illegal aliens that shouldn't be in the country in the first place, that aren't being picked up and returned, are committing crimes, are drunk driving, are killing people, are killing police officers, are raping, are murdering, and there's very few law enforcement agencies, aside from maybe Joe Arpaio, that are doing their job and turning these people back to ICE and getting them back into Mexico. Let's talk about that issue a bit. We haven't heard from that in a while either.
Well, and you should discuss it. I'll tell you what. I know Geraldo Rivera. I know he's got an agenda. His agenda is typical of La Raza, Mecha, LULAC, and again, all these other ignorant communists, as far as I'm concerned. They play the race card. And, of course, what Rivera is saying, he says real nonchalantly, well, you know, just because they're illegal immigrants, you know, they shouldn't. Well, they should. They're here illegally. They're illegally in our land. They're committing crimes. And in most cases, heinous crimes, And you're looking at 43,000 to 45,000people dying in the hands of illegal aliens on an annual basis. We don't need that 45,000 lives perished in the elements of and in the hands of illegal aliens. These people ought to go home. We should deport them. It's that simple, Dana.
The media, I think, has failed miserably, except for the odd program that covers this story and this issue as far as border security, whether it's from the north or the south, fairly. They seem to either not do anything, they slant it one way or the other, or they cotton into special interest groups, like you said. What would you and the Minutemen like to see the media do more of? I know you do your own media radio program, etc., and of course you're always welcome on my show, but what more can the media do?
The media should really forget about caving in to, well, in fact, I know for a fact they're caving in to higher echelon, whatever that would mean. But if they start doing fair and balanced, I think America would get a better grasp of what's going on. Quite frankly, it's a simple process, Dana. What you've got to do is you've got to secure your border. That's a given. Then the other one would be to enforce the law. The third one would be to make sure that you hold people that hire illegal immigrants accountable for their actions. And the fourth one, which is the one that I really go for, is you take away all the public services, social services, free education, make them pay tax, and no welfare, medical, and things of this nature. Guess what's going to happen? They're going to leave.
You spent time in the military, Vietnam, I believe, worked as a private investigator. You know the feeling and the response that those in the military, those that wear the uniform, those that do the job to protect and serve, without sounding flippant, you know, the feeling that you get. But there's been a lot of lack of respect. The border guards or border security people are attacked on a regular basis. We've seen the hidden video, whether it's rocks, Molotov cocktails, firearms, you name it, they're terribly underpaid. They serve prison time for doing their jobs. How do we encourage people to apply, to be interested? A lot of people would see that and say, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Well, it's similar to the military. Keep in mind that the military is now suffering those same consequences from a higher echelon. If you go out into combat, you're supposed to not fire until you get fired upon.
Right.
It's the same thing that happened in Vietnam. If you fire or you've got a round in your chamber, you wind up getting court-martialed. It's the same identical scenario that you've got with your border guards here, with your agents. If they go out and they secure the border, they suffer the wrath of this administration. They suffer the wrath of their chief or their captain. They are supposed to just turn their head and become oblivious to what goes on. Quite frankly, I can't prove that, but I know for a fact it's happening. A lot of these border agents are now reluctant to do their job. So how in the world can we recruit? And I think that's really the key. They want to stop recruiting agents because they don't want to secure the border. If they want to secure the border, they meaning our own government, we would have done it ages ago. We've got the ability. We can do it. We've got the technology, and we certainly have the funds. We just don't have the will.
What is the status of the wall? I know you guys have been working hard. We don't hear much of it lately. A lot of the politicians are talking about it, maybe a little bit, but they seem to be terribly uninformed. What is the status?
Well, they built, from what I understand, approximately an additional 70 miles. We've built one. That 1 mile has been very effective. It's certainly not stopped it, but it's certainly stifled it some. It's stymied it to a point. It's caused the illegal entry to be diverted into different areas where it makes it so much easier for border agents to do their job and make their arrests. The government refuses to want to do that, although they're throwing the political carrot out there and telling us how good they're doing, how they're going to just put up all these fences. Well, I don't buy it. I don't buy it one bit. We're going to continue the pressure on these people, and I'm not going to hang on my gloves as a Minuteman until that day I see and I hear that the border is secured. Other than that, they're going to see the Minuteman every morning. They're in their office. It's a 800-pound gorilla right on their desk. Here we are again, secure the border.
Absolutely. I've had you and Carmen on the show many times, and we've talked about this issue, but we don't talk about you guys too much, you know, your personal lives. And again, your own lives are personal, and that's that should be your choice. But you do sacrifice a great deal, whether you're in Washington, whether you're on the border, whether you're up in Canada, whether you're wherever. How difficult is this for you to do and, you know, live a normal life, so to speak?
It's very tough, Dan, and I'll tell you why. I retired 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago, from Southern California. I was exhausted. I was beat after working 24/7 as a private investigator. You get virtually no rest. And I retired here in Arizona thinking, hey, you know, I'm a young guy. You know, I was, what, 56, 57, something like that. I'm a young guy. I've got a lot of miles ahead of me. I'm going to just kick back. I'm going to relax. I'm going to enjoy life. I'm going to enjoy my children, my grandchildren, my wife. When this came up, I've already been in it almost 5 years now. So a week after I moved in, I started doing this. And, of course, I used to get paid as a private investigator. I don't get paid in this at all. I'm a volunteer. And, in fact, in most cases, I'm upside down. I pay out of my pocket for my own equipment, my gas, and things of this nature. So I'm a volunteer. And this is very uncomfortable. Our federal government should be doing this job. They're
exactly
getting paid.
Yeah.
They're supposed to represent the best interest of not only me, but you and the entire United States. They're not doing that. This is what I call taxation without representation. That's the Minutemen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you guys go above and beyond all the time. Al, you're welcome on the program anytime. Say hi to Carmen and Dave for me, and we'll stay in touch.
I will do it, man. Hey, you stay in touch too, man. It's always a pleasure, Dana.
Okay, take care.
Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Al Garza from the Minutemen Project. He's the National Executive Director. It's always nice to have them come on and talk, because they do get vilified in the media. They do get attacked for what they do. A lot of college campuses in Canada and the United States where they've gone to speak about border security have vilified them, but they're always welcome on the program. They're normal people who are out doing what they can to try and make us secure. We'll be back in just a minute with Pat Brown. She's a investigative criminal profiler. Her website is www.patbrownprofiling.com. And we're going to talk more about Drew Peterson and the case of Stacey Peterson. And, you know, we've been seeing it nonstop on Fox News, in particular Greta Van Susteren on CNN, on the Nancy Grace Show, which Pat is on quite a bit. And then a little later on, we'll talk to Richard, who he and other scared monkeys went to Pennsylvania to participate and try to remind people of the problem with Aruba. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
And we are back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Pat Brown is a investigative criminal profiler. She runs the Pat Brown Criminal Profiling Agency. A couple of websites that you'd be interested in are hers at www.patbrownprofiling.com and www.sheprofilers.com. You see Pat on Larry King, Nancy Grace, and other places. And I thought I'd bring her back on the program to talk more about this never-ending Drew Peterson case. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing, Dana?
Good. Nice to have you back on the program. It seems like the Drew Peterson case is never ending. We would love to get some, well, I don't know if you'll ever get closure with this guy. He's right out of a dime store novel.
It's going to be the classic example of, in my opinion, an alleged psychopath.
Oh, yeah.
How he behaves.
Oh, no doubt.
Ever and ever since he did the Today Show.
No doubt. And that's why I wanted to bring you on. Let's talk about the Today Show interview. You know, I watched it, and, you know, being in law enforcement myself for 25 years, I saw a rogue, arrogant, cocky, narcissistic punk, in my opinion, that I would have loved
to... Is that all, Dana, or is there anything else you'd like to...
Oh, I can keep going, but you're the guest. This guy is a piece of work without a doubt. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were so many red flags that went up during that interview. Every defense lawyer is like, get him off of there, get him off of there, you know?
Yeah.
But he really does believe that he can control things. He thinks that he is so smart that he is going to snow everybody with his charm and his cleverness, and he's going to pull the wool over our eyes, and maybe he'll get himself a top defense attorney, and on top of that, influence the future jury into believing that he's a great guy. He was wrong, but that's what he believed.
Well, that's just it. And watching that interview and hearing some of the comments he made, some of the sexist, derogatory, again, it just drove me crazy. And what attorney in his right mind would let him do this? But I think that, and I'm told
he doesn't
that,
have, he doesn't really have one yet. He's hoping to get a top-notch one just because since he's been on the Today Show,
yeah.
He's going to want to grab him because they're going to get wonderful publicity off of representing him, whether he's guilty or not. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, exactly. And I hear he even has a handler that's trying to book media appearances for him, and it's just incredible. But let's get back to the story itself. Here we're however many weeks now, no sign of Stacey, the third wife. There's been an official second autopsy. The family hired Mike Bodden to do an autopsy.
Right.
We shouldn't be shocked with the results that came out as far as the homicide, whether it was...
Well, the interesting thing is there really is probably no change from the original autopsy. The original autopsy pretty much proved it was a homicide to begin with.
Exactly. Yeah.
There was adequate information there to prove it was a homicide. The problem is, for some odd reason, it got labeled an asphyxiation by drowning when there was no evidence of drowning whatsoever, since there was no water in her lungs or anything like that. It was an asphyxiation without drowning. Well, that usually means you've been murdered.
Yeah. No, for sure. And
it just never was labeled that, and apparently there was no police investigation to follow up on that, you know, likelihood of it being a homicide. And consequently, I think this is all a waste of time pretty much because they're never going to be able to link her death. Even if you rule it a homicide, they're not going to link it to Drew Peterson. They're just going to say somebody knocked her off.
Yeah, exactly. And
possibly be. We don't know because we didn't do an investigation which could link back to anybody.
And it's going to be some old-fashioned police work if there's a conclusion to this case that brings him into it. I do have a question from a very avid listener that they would like me to ask you. Why would Drew Peterson continue to give media interviews when he is digging himself into a hole? Each time he gives these statements saying he wasn't abusive, others contradict him. And why would he even speak when he's a suspect? This ain't his first rodeo. I love that. He's a cop.
Right.
He should know. The more you let your mouth overload.
One is that he thinks either because they haven't found a body,
that
they're never really going to prove anything, and they're going to the only case they can really make is if there's enough physical evidence somehow linking him to the disappearance of Stacey. So in other words, if there was physical evidence in his car, or there's physical evidence in his home, or maybe if there's some really good perhaps witness evidence where he said just, you know, he was going to kill her and then she disappeared, then there might be some way they can get him. But other than that, I think he's banking on the fact they're never going to prove anything.
This same listener, I'll just finish up with her email, says very accurately, I believe, that she believes Drew Peterson is a couple of tacos shy of a Mexican platter. I love this. But the media coverage of it, without the media, and I include you in that, this case probably would not be at the status that it is right now, because the media opened this up, and I think the media did a good job by doing that. But then let's parallel that with the nonstop coverage on this story and maybe the lack of coverage on other stories and the whole perception of law enforcement, because law enforcement is taking a beating somewhat because all we hear about is Sergeant Peterson.
Right. Well, I think the biggest beating they're going to take is in the third wife's death, because that was a totally botched police investigation, and there may even be an issue of police misconduct and obstruction of justice if they purposely did not investigate Drew Peterson and investigated as a homicide when it should have been. That may be the biggest beating they're going to take. As far as Stacey goes, I mean, I think they've handled that case as well as we could expect, until they find a body, and they may indeed have enough physical evidence to go to court. At least Drew Peterson is actually alluding to the fact they have some physical evidence of some sort, because he's saying, well, we'll see how this case unfolds, and he's expecting to be indicted. Well, if that's true, he must know they have something.
Yeah.
And I think he's just going to bank on he's going to get a real darn good lawyer then, and the jury will not feel comfortable enough convicting him on that without a body. That's, I think, what he's hoping for.
Yeah, and again, it's his arrogance when he says that there's evidence, but it's made up, it's fabricated, and that's the part.
That's what you always can blame the police, and that's a good defense strategy anyway. Just to say that when you've got not much else to say.
What do you when you see? Again, talking about other networks than what you're on, but I know you've been on Fox before too. But when you see Mark Furman talking to Drew Peterson, your mind has to race a little bit, because Mark Furman was vilified in the media in the O.J. Simpson case because of the investigation. Now all of a sudden you're getting a cop who may or may not, but it's looking more like may, allegedly have killed one wife and be responsible for the disappearance of the fourth. Let's talk about the media perception and the people's perception of law enforcement because of this. Or is this just an interesting case?
Well, I mean, it's a fabulously interesting case. I don't think we can get around that. I mean, I find it an interesting case just because it's so incredible. It really is incredible. So I think media always will pick up on something that we have a character. We do have a character, and in this case, it's a police character.
Yeah.
It's a police character with four wives. I mean, yeah. It's an irresistible case, and there's no way around the fact the media is going to jump all over it.
Well, I talked about a dime store novel. Exactly. You have infidelity. You have a 17-year-old girl. You have an ex-wife with children who turns up dead in the bathtub. Body exhumations, high-profile pathologists, TV coverage, the rogue cop who got himself, one minute you're seeing him with the bandana across his face and a ball cap on, hiding from the media, to him grinning and talking to Matt Lauer.
Exactly, and that's one of the most interesting things about the psychopath of this all, because what a psychopath tends to do is he works with one situation until that situation is no longer workable. And I think what happened there was he was frustrated at that point when he started wearing the little disguises, that the media was intruding on his territory, and he wasn't in control, and he didn't appreciate that, but he was going to make it tough for them, and he was going to strike back. But when he realized that wasn't going, he was losing that game and was possibly going to be indicted, then he decided he's going to play the next game. The next game was, I'll become a media celebrity, and that will be my new game. And then if he does get indicted, he'll go on to the third game, which will be, I'm going to be O.J. in court. And then if he loses that game and actually ends up getting convicted, then he'll play cool boy in jail, and he'll get lots of letters from lovely ladies, and he'll get a fifth wife while he's in jail.
Yeah.
So he'll move on from one game to the other. In a sense, there probably is no punishment for Drew Peterson, as is true with many psychopaths, that since they enjoy playing their game, they just simply get away with one game after the other, and they're still having a darn good time. And by the time, even if he gets a death penalty, by the time it goes through our ludicrous system of appeals,
yeah,
he will be 85 years old. It won't matter anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll get a nice place to live for the rest of his life and lots of girlfriends.
Yeah, exactly. That's for sure.
And them.
A comment from a listener. It says the fourth one might not be missing too much privilege for one of their own. Tisk. Again, that whole perception. And was this investigation initially bungled? Was it covered up? Was it just lazy cops because it's one of their own? Your perception and your thoughts, and I had a guest on last week where we were talking about the domestic violence aspect of this, where all of a sudden you may have someone who watches this coverage, who is a victim of domestic violence, who may be a law enforcement officer's spouse, who's terrified to come forward anyway, and then sees this. How difficult is it going to be for them to be able to come forward, because they think no one's going to listen to them anyway?
Well, I think the whole, it's a difficult situation all the way around for everybody because of his law enforcement connection. But I don't necessarily think that anybody. It's really hard to say that anybody purposely did anything.
Right.
Because do you remember that part of the? There was an interview the other day on Nancy Grace with one of his friends from the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd known him for a long, long time, and he said, he was Drew's friend, and now he can't really support him anymore because he realizes that his timeline isn't working out. So he's thinking Drew is guilty. Well, what's interesting about that is while he was Drew's friend, he's meeting all Drew's wives, and he knows Drew is cheating on his wives, and he knows Drew is tapping the phone, bugging everything, and yet he continues to be Drew's friend.
Yeah.
And I think this is what happens a lot of times, that people don't really pull away and say, you know, this guy's a scumbag. I don't want anything to do with him. Because he's not a scumbag to them. He's friendly to them. He can drink with them, and he can have a good time with them. And so what happens within law enforcement is the same thing. It's like, yeah, you know, we know Drew has some home problems, you know, but, you know, he's a friend of mine.
Right.
And he's been a good cop, and I haven't had any problems with him personally. So therefore, I just kind of accept the way he is, and I can't really believe he'd do anything worse than just being a kind of crappy husband. So I think people tend to minimize a lot of bad behavior, just like the family will minimize behavior, and they'll say, well, we know all of this is true, but we just can't believe it'll be even worse than that. So they minimize everything to the point where they sweep things under the rug, and then later on it looks like they've covered up, when really what's happened is they just have been unwilling to be honest with themselves, that because they liked him as a person and he was nice to them, that he was really a pretty crummy guy, and they should have stood up and stepped up to the plate earlier on and said, you know, wait a minute, something's wrong with this guy, and we're not going to support it.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people with egg on their face over this. But my last question before we finish up, Pat, the families, they must be they're getting some answers now with the Baudin autopsy. Again, we shouldn't be shocked at the results. And it may bring some, I hate using that term closure, but it may bring some answers to them. But the families now just must be devastated and wonder, maybe we could have done this, maybe we could have done that. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, the families are always devastated after the fact, and it's one of the problems in our society that we have to step up to the plate earlier than that if we're gonna help our families out. And even individually, even these women themselves, I mean, I hate to disparage people who are probably, you know, have been murdered, but let's face it, the women all got involved with married men.
Yep.
Knew this man was married, they knew he had family, and they got involved with him anyway. They were willing themselves to kind of bend the rules of society and do things that weren't so kosher themselves, and not, you know, accepting the fact that when they're willing to do that, they also put themselves in harm's way, because this guy's not, is an unsavory character. You hook up with unsavory characters, sometimes you get burnt. And I only say this because I want to get this, you know, information out to young women out there everywhere, women in general out there, and men too. You know, if you're hooking up with somebody and they don't have a very clean past, they're doing things that are immoral or unethical, and you're hooking up with that, well, you know, you're stepping into a fire, and don't be surprised when you go down with it. And, you know, so it's just, you want to have a safe life, pick safe people.
Absolutely. Pat Brown from the Pat Brown Profiling Company at patbrownprofiling.com. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right. There are more on the Drew Peterson story, I'm sure, in the days and weeks to come. Saturday, I sat down with Richard, Scared Monkey Richard, and he was calling from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. How do you like that? I love that name. King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. And they were at the Valley Forge Convention Center. You got to listen to the parody of the name and what they're talking about. And, of course, they're there at a trade show talking to people about Aruba. And is Aruba safe? Here's what Richard had to say. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. A lot of the mainstream media have, well, I won't say dropped coverage as far as the Natalie Holloway investigation, but they certainly haven't been doing what they could be doing. But here at the Scared Monkeys Radio Network, and of course at ScaredMonkeys.com, we forge on, and you'll get the connection here in a minute with that, and we try to give you as much information as we can. A group of people who I have interviewed before on the air have gone out and tried to educate the public the best they could about Aruba, and that it is unsafe and certainly an unscrupulous place to go. And on the phone with me is Scared Monkey Richard at the Valley Forge protest, and we'll talk about that. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good to talk with you again.
Yeah, nice talking to you, too. Now, the Valley Forge protest, tell us about that.
All right. Well, six of us were there today. This was one of the trade shows around the nation that Aruba has decided to attend, and as we did in Boston and elsewhere, some of us thought we should be there to remind the public that Natalie Holloway, 2.5 years later, is still missing, with nothing apparently being done, and it will not be forgotten.
Absolutely. And you're the actual protest or the convention center, whatever, is in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, right?
Yes. Apparently, the convention center is technically in that town, King of Prussia. But it's named Valley Forge, and I think we all like the overtone.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that fit well. Now, explain to those that maybe first-time listeners or, you know, maybe missed the interview I did with you guys from Boston about the protest itself. What are you doing? Is this an education? Is it an actual protest where you're picketing? What is it that you're doing there?
Well, what we're trying to do, I think, is two things. One, remind the people who have forgotten or who don't know about it at all, about the Natalie Holloway case, what happened 2.5 years ago, what hasn't happened since, prosecution and finding answers.
Right.
And number two, the idea that it's not just another case. The Holloway Twitties are fighting a foreign government, a whole foreign government, many of us believe,
right,
that is trying to cover up what happened. They're getting very little, if any, help from our own government. We can't force Aruba to do anything, but we can say, as we have been saying, no justice for Natalie, no tourists for Aruba. So on the second point, I'd say what we all are trying to do is tell the people, this is a danger, and you can do something about it.
It
doesn't want you, it wants your money.
Exactly.
Don't give them your money.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to Aruba.
Exactly.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Don't go to Aruba.
How have things been going there? What kind of a reception have you been getting?
Well, today there were 6 of us, which was more than we expected, and the reception has been very good, we thought. We got a lot of signals of support. I'd say more people replied that they would tell the Aruban delegation directly what they thought than said that in Boston. Can I go over a few things that happened?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, one woman said she had a timeshare in Aruba, and she had had it, but since Natalie's disappearance, she would never go back. Never, ever.
Good.
Another person came to us and said, and said that she had once planned to go to Aruba, had to cancel her trip, and had called them to question whether she could get back a $150 deposit.
Right.
She said the Arubans were extremely nasty, placing harassing calls, and that she finally had to go to the FBI and ask them to intervene to stop this harassment.
Wow.
Another woman said, and some of us went in and confirmed this, the Arubans apparently had the biggest number of booths, the biggest floor space of any delegation at today's trade center, yet they got almost no attention. Nobody was going.
Good.
This one person came over to us with a big smile and said, I stood there, nobody was going, finally one couple was there. They strolled over, and then this woman said, I went to them and said, don't go to Aruba, it's not safe. Go talk to those people standing outside with the signs, they'll tell you. And then that couple later on went back to her and said, no, we decided we're not going.
Have you received any hassle or any problems from the, let's say, local authorities or any of the Aruban delegation there?
Well, this is interesting. I didn't go in there, but I'm told, apparently, except for a few so-called exotic dancers, the Arubans, they weren't Arubans. They appeared to be, you know, U.S. employees of some travel company.
Right.
Unlike in Boston, where we got a few bad looks.
I remember.
From Arubans. The Arubans apparently weren't there today. They must have hired someone to do their dirty work for them.
How about media coverage, Richard?
Exactly. Or maybe it was too cold for them at Valley Forge.
Yeah, maybe. Have you had any media coverage while you've been there?
Not yet. We're going to be there tomorrow as well. 2 of us will. And we hope to send out a number of photos, too. I mean, some of us did take photos. Oh, I also want to tell you that we got quite a response from travel agents at the show, more than in Boston, I thought.
Really? Okay.
And quite a number expressed interest. And 2 rather youngish men, at the end, came over to us and said, hey, you know, the Arubans were a bunch of clowns. They annoyed almost everybody there. They were loud, they were noisy, they were offensive. People didn't like them. They didn't mean Aruban people. They meant those people who, I guess, were representing Aruba.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we're talking about Aruba, we're talking about the government, we're talking about the authorities who have not investigated this case the way that it should be. We're not talking about the normal, everyday Aruban that tries to live a decent life. We're talking about an island that can't protect foreign citizens, and when there is a investigation that needs to be done, they fail miserably at it. I think we need to make that very clear.
Right. Well, now, and the reason is, why do they fail? I mean, look at all the lies we've had from day one.
Right.
Do they fail because they don't have experience, or because they've been told to fail, or even something darker, which is what I think. But you also remember a recent National Geographic article, I believe, gave Aruba very low marks as a tourist destination.
Yeah, it's just not safe, and that's important.
Yeah.
No, the convention continues on tomorrow, and you guys will be there.
Two of us will be there anyway.
Now we are
bound and determined. We're going to continue with our slogan: No justice for Natalie, no tourists for Aruba. And from what I was told, the public is receiving our message because nobody was interested in Aruba today. They had the biggest floor space of any representative there, but they didn't get any business.
And
one of us said even the so-called exotic dancers seemed depressed because other Caribbean nations there were getting attention.
Wow.
Nobody cared about Aruba.
And we should clarify, we're recording this Saturday evening, and the convention itself finishes up on Sunday.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Well, Richard, I want to thank you for coming on and recording this with me. You guys are doing a great job keeping the story alive, keeping the public informed, educated, and give a shout-out for who's down there with you.
Right. Well, first of all, in this one, I play a very minor role. Very, you know, much more attention and much more praise should be given to Vicky, who's been running things now, running the scheduling, to Jamie in Alabama, who sent up her beautiful signs and some wonderful sweatshirts, which say have Natalie's photo on them, missing person case, Natalie Ann Holloway. And I think, you know, not everybody remembers, as in Boston, not everybody remembered the name, but most people remembered the case.
Right.
And I'm sure everybody recognized Natalie's photo from that sign that Jamie had done so beautifully. It was there. We had a photo facing the traffic, another photo facing, another big poster facing the interstate highway nearby, and people were giving us signs of support, waving, thumbs up. I don't think, not everybody reacted, of course, but I honestly don't think we got one negative comment. We did get a few in Boston. None of us got one negative comment today.
That's fantastic.
All the comments we got were positive.
Oh, that's fantastic. Richard, Scared Monkey Richard at the Valley Forge protest in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. You guys are doing great work. Thank you, sir.
Okay, and I just want to remind another thing. 106 just reminded me that handheld signs today said, Aruba, find the truth. Where is Natalie? And we told the public that's what we want to know. And if we don't get it, please don't go to Aruba, and please tell the people you won't go.
Well said.
And we also had the thing, as we did in Boston, Natalie and Beth are here in spirit, and I'm sure it's true.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care, Richard.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's Richard at the King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. Love that. Anyway, thanks to my guests this evening. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. The podcast will be available a little later on this evening at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And we'll be back Wednesday night, I believe, at 9 o'clock Eastern. Do you remember Pat Bedrea, the young boy with leukemia, who started the Driving for Donors program? Well, he's one of the heroes in the Heroes Contest on CNN. And we'll be having him on Wednesday night, plus other guests that I'm sure you'll enjoy. So I want to thank you all for listening. Take care, and we'll see you Wednesday. Remember the webpage, scaredmonkeysradio.com. Good night.
been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.